Welcome to Tex Murphy Radio Theater. When we last saw our hero, Tex and his longed-for love interest Chelsea had, at last, gone out on their first official date. As they left the restaurant, Chelsea finally gave Tex the kind of lip he'd been looking for. But the kiss was rudely interrupted when Tex noticed, to his horror, that his speeder had been stolen. Just then, a mysterious man with an Aussie accent showed up and offered them a ride. Over Tex's protests, Chelsea accepted. For once, Tex was right. High above the city, the man pulled out a gun, shot Chelsea, then turned and fired at Tex. And now, as our story resumes, a moonless night and the fog is rolling in off the Pacific. An enormous decaying structure peers down from a sheer cliff high above. Like a ghostly lighthouse, a single square of pale light radiates from a window on the top floor of this ancient mansion. Inside the room, a bare bulb burns and casts violent shadows on the cracked and peeling walls as the occupant of the room contorts and cries out in a vain attempt to escape his subconscious torture. And now, Episode 1, The Naked and the Bed.
You must not move, Captain Donnelly. Your plane, it was, how do you say, shot down?
My name's Murphy.
You are badly wounded, monsieur. Lie still while I bathe you.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
Ooh. Ooh la la.
Oh, yeah.
Does that please you, mon capitaine?
Yeah, that feels real good.
Now I know why they call you doughboys. You don't work out
much.
Not
much, do you?
It was the worst kind of dream. Kind where you think you're going to get lucky with a buxom French girl and suddenly you're woken up by a sponge-wielding pervert reeking of pastrami. You must have sensed my discomfort.
Okay, bath's over. Go back to sleep.
It felt like I'd been dreaming for years. Half the time, it was a collage of images, needles, clocks, an old-fashioned rotary dial telephone, a dead body in a boat, girls screaming, eggs covered with diamonds and gems. I hear dozens of voices, one is soft and low, telling me where to go. And there are other voices I can't understand. The rest of the time, I'm in an old house. It's drafty and there's a musty smell. I hear cockroaches scurrying across the floor. Feels just like my place, except the bed's a lot more comfortable. In fact, it's so comfy I can't move. Unfortunately, I wasn't dreaming anymore, and I still couldn't move my arms and legs. I couldn't see anything either. And judging by the cool breezes in my nether regions, it felt as if a blindfold and handcuffs were all I had on. I tried to get free, but it was no use. Someone had me exactly where they wanted me. I didn't know why or who, but my recent sponge bath had left me feeling a little dirty and violated, and someone was gonna pay. But just then, I heard voices and decided to follow orders and pretend I'd gone back to sleep.
The sedatives ain't working too well anymore.
Double the dosage. We're not done with him yet.
I already doubled the dosage.
Then triple it. Is the taxi en route?
Should be here any minute. If I triple the dosage, you'll have a hard time getting channeled. Unless you can channel them when they're dead.
He's probably built up an immunity to toxic substances. Just look at him.
How much longer we gotta hold him? I hear they finished up with the girl.
That's what I intend to find out, if the taxi ever gets here. You're certain he was regaining consciousness? It appears he's adequately sedated.
He's coming and going. He's been dreaming about the regressions.
Give him another injection. We don't want him awake.
I'll send the nurse up.
Whatever they were talking about, I didn't like the sound of it. And the handcuffs and blindfold, not to mention the nudity, were starting to worry me. I tried to think back, figure out how I'd gotten here, wherever here was. My last memory was walking out of the Golden Pagoda with Chelsea, the real girl of my dreams. Maybe I was still hallucinating, but I seem to remember being suddenly distracted just as we started kissing.
Oh no!
What? It's me. It's me. It's
Man,
my breath.
No, it has nothing to do with
I
you.
I shouldn't have had the garlic sauce.
Look. Look. Our speeder. It has been stolen. Somebody has stolen our car.
Oh.
Yeah, believe it.
Everything after that was all hazy.
Things could get worse. Things could get worse.
I'd been in plenty of predicaments before, and this one seemed like a real doozy. But for some reason, all I could think about was a bowl of Louis' spicy lamb chili and a mug of his special Armageddon blend. I heard my tummy growl, and then it was drowned out by the sound of approaching footsteps.
Mr. Murphy, can you hear me? Please, Mr. Murphy, are you awake?
Maybe.
Thank goodness.
Who are you?
I'm a friend. Unlike the others.
Where am I?
In a dangerous place. I'm going to help you escape.
Am I naked?
Completely.
Oh, I thought so. You know, it's just so darn cold.
I'm going to undo your manacles. But you must promise you won't move until it's safe. If they find out I helped you escape, they'll kill me.
Literally or figuratively?
There's no time to explain. You must pretend I administered the sedative. After they check on you, there'll be time to escape. Just remember, the White Russians are your friends.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, but I usually drink bourbon.
Don't forget, Mr. Murphy, please.
I ain't been this confused since 10th grade algebra. I'd never been a good student, and I was even worse at following other people's instructions. But I could play dead with the best of them, which is exactly what I did at that moment.
Did we go night-night?
Mr. Spongebath reached down and tickled the bottom of my foot, apparently to check my state of consciousness. Took all the power I had out to squeal like a schoolgirl! I hadn't shown that much self-control since the last time I saw Chelsea in a black mini in fishnets.
Sweet dreams, Mr. Murphy.
I pulled off my blindfold and looked around. There was no doubt about it. I was definitely naked. I'd lied about the room being cold, but I didn't feel like walking around in my birthday suit. Luckily, the ensemble I'd worn at the Golden Pagoda was on the chair in the corner of the room. I sat up and slid my legs off the bed. Oh, great, a bedpan! Shaking my foot dry, I hurried to the chair and got dressed. A bare bulb glowed inside the room, but outside the window it was dark. I just set the fedora on my head when I heard someone coming. With cat-like reflexes, I climbed out of the window and onto the ledge outside. Not a moment too soon.
He's gone!
I steadied myself, ready to go Pele on Mr. Spongebath and drop kick him into next week. I heard him start to lean out the window.
What is it?
Ow! Damn it!
Where is he?
You tell me! I'm not the freaking psychic!
He must be out there, on the ledge.
Where the hell do you think I was looking?
He's not out here. He must be somewhere in the building. Summon the others. Find him!
Hanging from ledges was a skill they'd never taught us at the University of Investigation of Utah, but it was something I'd found handy on more than one occasion. But by the time I heard the window close above me, it felt like my arms had been dunked in diesel fuel and lit on fire. Pulling myself up would defy all laws of physics as I understand them, so I looked down. I was at least 40 feet off the ground. There was a ledge below me, maybe 6 feet down, but it looked like a country mile away. But desperate situations call for desperate measures. I closed my eyes and let go. Oh! I was fairly certain both legs were broken, but that wasn't the worst of it. I looked over the ledge. 30 feet below me was a cast iron fence with long, sharp, pointy things on it. The branch of an ancient oak tree was almost in reach, but the standing long jump had never been my forte. I figure I needed to get a little lower before jumping, so I crawled back in through the window. I entered a dark room. Fortunately, my trusty Zippo was in the pocket of my trench coat. I moved the light around, looking for anything I could use as a weapon. Lacking the strength to wield a sofa or an empty bookcase, I found nothing of use. I decided to check under the sofa. No weapons, but there was a fortune cookie.
You'll soon find true love if you know where to look. Yummy.
Nothing else left to find in the room, I went to the door and looked out into the hallway.
Hey!
That turned out to be a bad move. I deadbolted the door and reviewed my options. There weren't too many. I stepped back onto the ledge and I thought about dropping down to the next ledge, but I was fairly sure that neither my arms nor my legs could take it. That left one possibility. Try for the oak tree. Harnessing my inner chi, I gathered myself and exploded off the ledge.
Luckily, I landed on a bush.
All that chi stuff is a bunch of crap.
As I checked for broken bones, a bright light descended from the night sky. For a split second, I thought it might be the white light that they'd taught me about in Sunday school. Then I heard a voice.
You call for a cab? Or should I call an ambulance?
Nothing to worry about. I do this for a living. I'm a PI.
I hope you're good at that, because you're not much of a stuntman.
Ordinarily, I would have retaliated with a crushing comeback. You can't get much lower than being insulted by a hack. But I didn't have the heart since I was going to have to stiff him on the fare. I'd spent the last of my cash at the Golden Pagoda and my abductors hadn't provided any monetary compensation. But I was glad to find they'd left not only my Zippo, but also my pack of unfiltered llamas. I pulled one out and lit one up.
Do you mind? Your cigarette's bothering me.
Yeah? Well, it's killing me. I smoked the llama all the way down, and seeing as how the cabbie never made a move for the eject button, I decided to use my line of credit to pay him.
Here you are, brew and stew.
I'll be just a second. As usual, Louis was a ball of fire, bouncing around like a pinball, keeping his usual diner full of customers well-fed and well-drunk. Somehow, amid the controlled chaos, he noticed me and bustled over. His welcome wasn't as warm as I'd come to expect.
Where you been, wife?
Beats the hell out of me. I hate to do this to you, but would you mind loaning me some cash? I got a cabbie outside who claims I owe him some money.
How much you need?
$40.
Dollars?
I don't think he meant pesos.
$40? That including tip?
You tip cabbies?
Here's 50. You know, you shouldn't be showing your face in public. Go give this to the taxi guy and meet me round back.
Come on, Louie. You know I'm good for it.
Yeah, I know, Mike. It ain't that. We'll talk. Now, go on.
As I left the diner, I noticed almost everyone looking in my direction and whispering. Even the cabbie acted a little weird when I came back with the money, though it may have been because I gave him 5 rolls of quarters. After he flew off, I went around to the back stairs and entered Louie's apartment above the diner. He showed up a few minutes later.
Don't get me wrong, wife. I'm real glad to see you. I've been worried.
Mind telling me what's going on? Why are people staring at me? I know I need a shave, but...
You don't know?
Do I act like I know?
Where you been?
What is with all the questions?
You're right about needing a shave. A shower probably wouldn't hurt either.
Well, maybe I should go back to the Ritz. I had the cabbie drop me here because I'm having an out-of-money experience and I thought you'd help out your old buddy.
You best stay right here. I gotta go back downstairs, but I'll send you up some grub. After I close up, we'll have a talk, okay?
I'd never turned down a free meal, especially from Louie. He'd sold out of the spicy lamb chili, but the special, whatever it was fit for a king. I spent the next few hours surfing 824 channels, and the best thing I could find was a Barnaby Jones marathon. I was well into my third episode when Louie finally broke free.
So, you liked the special?
Yeah, it was super yummy. What do you call it?
Meatloaf.
Yeah, well, that's not what my dad called it.
So you want to tell me what you've been up to?
Okay. Chelsea and I went to dinner at the Golden Pagoda. The next thing I know, I wake up in some sort of hospital. A girl helped me get out of the handcuffs, and I jumped into a bush from a third-story window, got picked up by a taxi, which drove me here.
Nothing else?
Well, in my book, that's kind of a full day.
What about before today?
What are you talking about? I saw you yesterday, right before I went to dinner with Chelsea.
I don't know how to tell you this, Mife, but you've been gone over a month, and the cops are looking for you.
I'd never been in trouble with the police. Okay, I'd been in trouble with the police, but I never had a warrant out for my arrest. Actually, I had a couple of warrants out for my arrest, but only for parking tickets and other misdemeanors, never a felony. Well, there was that one time, but the charges were dropped. But all in all, I was fairly certain I'd cleared everything up. So when Louis said the cops were looking for me, it came as a total shock. But Louis, being the kind soul he is, made sure I had a support group when he finally broke the news. After the diner had closed for the day, he invited Clint and Rook over for some tea and sympathy, or in this case, bourbon and animosity.
I assume the police are on their way.
Come on, Rook. We gotta let Mife tell his side of the story before we do anything.
I know all I need to, thank you very much. Why do you suppose he's been laying low for the past month? Explain that, Murphy.
I don't have to explain anything to you, you little half-pint.
Oh, feel the anger. I knew it was just a matter of time before he snapped.
Yeah, and I guess you'd know all about that, wouldn't you, Clint? By the way, looks like you've got a little mocha frappy on your chin.
Now, we ain't gonna get nowhere if all of you start bickering. Let's just have a drink and figure out what we're gonna do. How about this, Mife? Why don't you tell us what you do remember?
Like I said, I was at the Golden Pagoda with Chelsea.
And you probably made her pay for dinner for the final insult.
Keep quiet, Rook. Go on, Mife.
Well, we'd finished eating, and Chelsea was telling me about my Chinese zodiac sign.
And that would be the jackass, huh?
It says you're clever, skillful, you're unusually inventive, and you're able to solve difficult problems easily.
See? I told you I was amazing.
However, you must guard against impatience or being overly agreeable.
That is so true.
It also says that monkeys think that they're funnier than they actually are.
I don't think so. Monkeys are hilarious and incredibly handsome.
Okay, your turn. Read me mine.
What's your year?
13.
Yeah.
As if you didn't know.
Let's see, 2013. Well, what do you know? You're some kind of snake woman.
Just read it, monkey boy.
Well, you have great wisdom, though you speak little. You're right.
No comments. Just keep reading.
You can be vain and selfish, yet you have great sympathy and compassion. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, hey, this is good. It says you have a calm surface, but underneath you are an intense and passionate person and yearn to be my slave of love.
It doesn't say that.
Sure it does.
Uh-uh.
In so many words, it says that.
Words.
I think I'm going to rage.
Could we just skip to the interesting part?
I just thought you miserable, lonely bachelors might want a taste of what it's like to be me.
I've already lived in a dumpster. Come on, let's get on with it.
Fine. So this fortune teller comes by the table, asks if we want a reading, and of course Chelsea does. So I shuffle these tarot cards, and the woman lays them out, and the first card is the Lovers.
Oh, God.
Call the police, Louis, and tell them to bring a straitjacket.
I am dead serious. And then she flips over, like, an Ace of Pentagrams, a Knight of Something, a Something of Swords, and a couple of other ones.
Ah, straight.
Well, that's what I said, but then Chelsea punched me, and I had to sit there while the lady explained everything.
This card, the Lovers, represents your present position and symbolizes the beginning of romance. I don't suppose I need to tell you two anything about that, do I? The Ace of Pentacles, which crosses the Lovers, is your immediate influence and represents obstacles lying just ahead.
Now, what kind of obstacles?
A common interpretation of this card is treasure.
Well, shiver me timbers!
Shh! Oh, stop.
The next card is your crown, your goal or destiny. The Knight of Wands is a vague card, indicating a journey into the unknown. The card to the right represents events from the distant past that influence the present.
The High Priestess?
The High Priestess is an auspicious card.
What's suspicious about that?
Tex, don't be stupid. She said auspicious, not suspicious.
Oh.
Listen.
She symbolizes secrets, mystery, a future as yet unrevealed. The card in this position identifies the strongest influence from your past. What's unusual here is that the Page of Swords almost always represents an actual person.
Sylvia.
I feel strongly that this person is attempting to perceive the unknown by prying into your deepest secrets.
Now, the last card is upside down. Does that mean anything?
Yes, unfortunately. This is your future influence. The Nine of Pentacles reversed indicates danger, loss of a valued possession, or perhaps a valued friendship.
Are there any happy cards here?
Let's hope so. There are four more cards to be shown. This first one reveals your present attitude. Like other cards, the Six of Cups shows that you're moving towards the past. Memories, faded images, things that have vanished. Oh, maybe we shouldn't go on.
No way. You've already peeked at the next one, and I wanted to see just how low we can go.
All right, but I must warn you. This card represents the things in the environment or atmosphere around you right now.
So, what was the last card?
It was the Devil.
Ooh, scary.
How appropriate. Was the Devil wearing a ridiculous fedora?
Hush up, Rook! So then you and Chelsea left the restaurant?
Right. We walked out and I saw that my speeder had been stolen.
Sure it was. By a repo man.
Hey, it wasn't much, but it was paid off.
Then what, Mife?
That's all kind of a blur. I've been racking my brains trying to piece it together.
Try to remember. Did you call the police? Did you go somewhere?
Well, I have this image of some weird-looking guy in a speeder. This guy started to park in the space where my speeder was. He had an accent. Australian, I think. He and Chelsea started talking. I was still in shock. Okay. I'm pretty sure he asked me if I wanted a ride to the police station. The cop shop, he called it.
Aussies, man, I love them!
So you and Chelsea got into a speeder?
Yeah. But I had a really bad feeling. Some sort of deja vu. And I remember a woman's voice saying something about Fabergé.
So, on top of everything else, you were drunk.
Okay, I'd had a few sakis, but I swear, this is the truth.
And that's all you can remember?
I guess. Wait. No.
What?
He pulled a gun on us. Now I remember. He shot Chelsea, and when I turned around, I was looking down the barrel of a gun. That's all I remember.
I believe you, Mike. What about you guys?
I think he's gone completely mad.
I know it sounds crazy, but if you don't believe me, ask Chelsea.
Well, that would be a trick now, wouldn't it?
One of you please tell me what the hell is going on?
They found your speeder, Moife. It had got burned down to almost nothing. And someone was inside it. I don't know how to tell you this, Moife, but Chelsea's dead.
I'd never believed in intuition. Don't ask me why, it was just a feeling. Despite what Louis had told me, I knew Chelsea wasn't dead, but it seemed like I was the only one, which explained why the cops were looking for me. For the first time in my life, there was a bounty on my head, and that explained why, after I got done telling my story, Louis had to wrestle the phone away from Rook. But in the end, Rook and Clint agreed to both keep quiet about me, and Louis and I agreed not to beat them both to a pulp. I heel-toed it up to the Ritz Hotel and climbed the fire escape to my apartment/office. I'd been a month behind on my rent the night I went to the Golden Pagoda, which meant I actually was now 2 months behind. My landlord, Nilo, he didn't need a reward to turn me into the cops. Actually, he probably would have paid good money. My apartment looked like it had been ransacked, just the way I'd left it. I'd made a mental list of things to do, and the first two were a shave and a self-imposed bath. Once I'd cleaned up, literally and otherwise, I decided to lie on the bed and relax for a few minutes.
Somewhere in the North Atlantic, frozen in the ice. It's somewhere in the North Atlantic, frozen in the ice.
Look, Donnelly, we know you killed your partner.
I'm with the OSS. We're investigating the claims of the
missing.
Look, Donnelly, we know you killed
Sie schon von der Enigma-Maschine gehört?
I'm with the OSS. We're investigating the claims of a Miss Anna Anderson.
It's somewhere in the North Atlantic, frozen in the ice.
Oh, who in the tour of war?
We know you killed Parker.
I woke up 2 hours later in a cold sweat. The nightmares were back. I made a pot of my special rejuvenating Java and went online to find out more details on why I'd made the city's 10 most wanted list. Apparently, my speeder had been found outside the city still burning. Charred bone fragments of a woman's body were inside and Chelsea's purse was discovered nearby. I'm no lawyer, but even I would have been able to convict myself. There had to be some evidence that I could use to clear my name. I decided to take a chance on the only person I was on speaking terms with in the police department.
Well, if it isn't the Pandora detective, how's Trix?
Can't complain, Mac. At least I'm not fat and ugly.
Oh, stop. You're killing me. Oh, wait. I'm getting me confused with your girlfriend.
Funny you should mention that. That's the reason I'm calling.
What a guy. You could have confessed to anyone, but you chose little old me.
I would if I could, Mac, but I didn't, so I won't.
What was that second part?
Using the smallest words possible, I told Mac why a confession was out of the question. After the disappointment wore off, he agreed that I probably wasn't the most logical suspect.
Fact is, I know you didn't whack Chelsea. Hell, everybody knows you didn't.
Well, not exactly everybody.
You got set up, but somebody's dead and somebody's gonna get blamed. And as usual, you're standing there like a baby deer in the headlights.
Your point being?
The only person who's gonna get you off the hook is you.
Well, Mac had always been a master of the obvious. But now I knew I couldn't let the cops take me alive. If I ended up in the pokey, I'd never make bail, and that meant I'd never be able to clear my name, and the conviction would be a mere formality. I thanked Mac for the tip, and I hung up. Hello? I'd never understood why, but I'd always gotten more than my fair share of obscene phone calls and wrong numbers. I mean, what were the odds of someone randomly dialing 0696969? But I had a hunch this call was different. Someone was checking to see if I was home. I decided to get the hell out, but where was I gonna go? My speeder was charcoal, and I had just enough cab fare to make it to the Bruin Stew. Now there's an idea.
Sure, Mike, I got a car.
You mean a speeder?
No. A 74 Camaro, souped up, mag wheels, the works! You do know how to drive a stick, don't you?
Sure. Well, it had been a while since I'd driven a car, but it was just like riding a bike. It wasn't just my gut that was telling me Chelsea was alive. I remembered that my sponge bather had said something curious.
How much longer we gotta hold him? I hear they finished up with the girl.
And then there was the fortune cookie I'd found. I was certain it was the one from the Golden Pagoda. I'd opened mine and said beware of fortune tellers. But Chelsea had put hers in her purse. I was sure of it. And I knew she found me mysterious and just a little dangerous. But she also knew I was one hell of a detective. Maybe it was wishful thinking, but it seemed possible she'd left it for me to find. As I made my way through the streets of old San Francisco, I racked my brain trying to figure out who would want to frame me for Chelsea's murder and why. When you're a top-notch PI, making enemies comes with the territory. I'd only made a few, but of those, J. St. Gideon, Lowell Percival, the Chameleon, and Jackson Cross were all dead. And Big Jim Slade, as far as I knew, was still somewhere making license plates and using soap on a rope. There were only two people I could think of that hated me and weren't dead or in jail. Frank Shimming and my ex-wife Sylvia. But Sylvia wouldn't do anything unless there was money to be extorted, and Shimming would have killed me, not Chelsea. I finally found my way back to where I'd been held captive for over a month. It was an old Victorian mansion, overgrown and dilapidated. It wasn't until that moment that I realized I was weaponless and faced with the same obstacles I'd had while escaping. Luckily, or maybe not, the house looked abandoned. Hello? Whoever had been there had cleared out in a hurry. There was a room stacked to the ceiling with medical supplies and closets full of clothes. The kitchen had remnants of half-eaten meals. There was even fresh pipe smoke in the air. I'd found the room where they kept me. The handcuffs were still hooked to the bed frame. I started in a room on the fourth floor. By the time I'd reached the ground floor, all I'd found of interest was a mostly full bottle of Jack Daniels and a pamphlet on an upcoming Fabergé exhibit. Then I found the only locked door in the entire house. Knock, knock. It took some finessing, but I was able to pick the lock. Inside the room, I found surveillance equipment, cameras, and a video disc player. Unfortunately, there weren't any video discs to be found, but experience had taught me to always look in the most likely place. Sure enough, there was a disc inside the player. I popped it back in and hit the play button. It was a video of a funeral, filmed from a distance, apparently by a couple of foreigners. Russian, maybe. As the camera moved around, I saw some familiar faces. Louis, Rook, Clint, Zach from the electronics shop, Crazy Gary, the vigilante vegetarian, even Nilo. There were some faces I hadn't seen in years. Ardo Newpop and Mrs. Lucida from the Slice of Heaven. There were also a few other people I didn't recognize, but it suddenly dawned on me the funeral I was watching was Chelsea's. The video disc player was a cheap piece of crap from the electronics shop, so I decided to take a closer look on my high-tech equipment back at the office. I was just slipping the disc into the pocket of my overcoat when I heard a noise behind me. Who are you?
Who are you?
I ask you first.
I am a representative of the Cassian faction. Now give me that disc.
Why should I?
Because I say so!
Looks like someone's forgotten the magic word. All right, close your eyes and hold out your hand. Whoever this guy was, he fought like a girl. After I'd sucker punched him and scratched his eye, I grabbed hold of his hair and smashed his head onto the edge of the table, knocking him out cold. You picked the wrong PI to screw with today, pal. With the disc and pamphlet safely tucked away, I pulled out the bottle of JD and took a well-deserved swig as I swaggered out the front door. The Camaro was right where I'd left it, except I didn't remember parking it next to a bunch of police speeders.
You're under arrest, Murphy. The building is completely surrounded. Now drop the bourbon and step away.
The cops handcuffed me, but at least they let me keep my clothes on. After a short flight to the cop shop, I was scanned, printed, and photographed. Then they took me upstairs. One of them asked if I wanted some coffee, but I wasn't going to fall for that old trick. I was escorted into the interrogation room. The chair was as uncomfortable as I remembered, but it looked like the bare bulb was a fresh 60 water. I settled in for a battle of wills. 12 hours later, I was ready to confess that I'd kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. I told the cops I wouldn't say another word without my attorney present, but they weren't falling for that old joke, so I resorted to feigning a spastic seizure. Well, that did the trick. A few minutes later, I was safely in the drunk tank, curled up in the fetal position.
Come on, Murphy. We both know you ain't got Tourette's.
My chain's all yanked out, Mac. Go get someone else to pull your finger.
Shut up. We gotta talk.
Mac sounded serious. Either his hemorrhoids were acting up, or things were somehow worse than I thought.
We're gonna have to make this quick. I know we don't exactly send each other birthday cards, but we've helped each other out a few times, and that's worth something.
Tell you what, Mac. Get me out of here, and I'll buy you a cake with candles. When's your birthday?
September 7th. But that's not the reason
Virgo. I should have guessed.
Candle voodoo, Murphy. Clements thinks she's being generous, making the charge second degree. That's just because she knows you can't make bail.
Well, that depends. You think it'll be more than a couple $100?
Try 3 more zeros. Maybe you could hawk some stuff.
I was already counting on that. Maybe you could pick me up a couple of lottery tickets.
I got another idea. Punch me.
Look, I appreciate you trying to cheer me up, and any other time I'd be all over it. But seeing as how we're going to exchange birthday cards...
Look, you idiot. If you knock me out, I can say you blindsided me and use my keys and pass cards to escape. It'll be embarrassing as hell, but it's worked before.
I don't think I can do that, Mac. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
That is what Chelsea said.
Excuse me?
Yeah, me and Chelsea used to hook up while you're out of town. She has great full-body massages. She uses lots of oil. Of course, it takes more oil than it used to, but hell, we talk about you for hours and hours and laugh and laugh. And then we dress up like... Ow! Come on, Murphy! Is that all you got?
We ended up going with Plan B. Mac gave me his keys and pretended I'd knocked him out. Things were finally looking up. Not only was I out of the pokey, but I'd gotten to punch out a fat-nosed bastard cop. On the downside, I owed him birthday cakes for life. And even if I managed to break out of the big house, I'd be on the lam forever. Or at least until I found my one-armed man. I crept down the corridor playing passcard roulette with Malden's keychain. As I reached an intersection, I paused at the corner.
How did he make bail?
He didn't. Some friend of his.
He's got friends?
Yeah, stupid friends. And he's going to run like a cheap pair of nylons.
Oh, I hate cheap nylons.
If they were talking about me, well, it seemed too good to be true. Getting bailed out beat the hell out of a jailbreak. So I made like Elmer Fudd hunting Wabbit and tiptoed back to the cell. After some paperwork and a stern warning to stay within the city limits, I found myself in the passenger seat of Louis' Camaro. I'd pretty much decided the whole setup was connected to Chelsea and not me. I'd just been in the wrong place at the wrong time, as usual. I asked Louis if he'd mind making a quick stop at Chelsea's apartment at the Seven Gables. He waited out in the car as I climbed to the third floor, stopping only once to catch my breath. I reached the door and was about to go to work on the lock when I heard something inside the apartment. The door was unlocked and I flung it open, catching a swarthy and guilty-looking fellow by surprise.
Hasta diablo!
My suspicions were confirmed when the intruder bolted for the open window. I was right behind him. He managed to give me the slip, but I was able to catch a glimpse of the Nevada license plate on his speeder as it lifted off. I returned to the apartment and started my search with a large pile of mail on the floor near the mail slot in the door. Only one item caught my eye. The new Victoria's Secret catalog. I decided to follow up on a hunch. Sure enough, the bottom drawer of a dresser in Chelsea's bedroom was packed full of lacy underpants and other sexy lingerie. More than ever, I wanted to find her alive and well. I continued to search her apartment until I found her diary. Hey, I'm a PI, and PIs leave no stone unturned. The diary was sealed with one of those chintzy locks, but it was a snap to pick once I found a pair of pliers.
Dear diary, tomorrow will be 1 year since I met Tex. Looking back, it's hard to believe I'd be interested in this smelly bum that passed out in my newsstand. I've made reservations at the Golden Pagoda to celebrate the anniversary, but I'll probably have to drag him there. He's hands down the most irresponsible man I've ever met. I know he likes being a PI, but I just don't think he's cut out for it. It seems like he gets beat up a lot and he never makes any money. I think he'd do so much better as a security guard or maybe a doorman. I just wish I knew what he thinks about me. He still wears his wedding ring. Maybe I'll ask him about it tonight.
As usual, Chelsea was speaking in riddles. Did she like me or not? It was too confusing to think about, and I had bigger fish to fry. I continued my search, finding plenty of interesting things, but nothing related to Chelsea's disappearance. Not until I checked the vidphone, that is.
Message 1. Left 33 days ago.
Hey, Chels, it's me. I'm out of bed now, but I cut myself shaving and the tourniquet won't stay on. I'll be there as soon as I can.
Message 2. Left 32 days ago.
Hello, Chelsea. This is Professor Perry.
I'd like to get together outside of class and discuss the paper you wrote about Anastasia Romanov. It's absolutely extraordinary. You have my number. I'll talk to you soon.
Message 3. Left 28 days ago.
Panineki.
Message 4. Left 9 days ago.
Hey, big sister. Look, I'm in a bit of a bind, and I really need to get a hold of you. There's no way for you to contact me at the moment, but I'd appreciate if you can be home tomorrow at this time, and I'll call back, okay? Love you.
Message 5. Left 8 days ago.
Okay, sis, now I'm getting worried. I wanted to see if you got those books I sent. I need the cash pretty bad. That little guy at the pawn shop should have given you top dollar for them. I hope you get this message soon. I have to leave town, but I'll get back to you when I can.
I found the books referred to in the message, but I couldn't for the life of me remember a single thing about Chelsea's brother, not even his name. But I did know a little guy at a pawn shop. I don't know how I'm ever going to repay you for this, Louis.
It wasn't just me, Moif. Don't tell Rook I told you, but he pitched in a bunch. So did Clint and some of the other folks in the neighborhood.
No, I mean, I have no idea how I'm going to come up with cash.
You don't have to, Moif. We'll get it all back. I got faith in you.
I didn't have the heart to tell Louis I was about to roll the dice on what must have been most of his life savings. He knew I was a rotten gambler. I mean, I can't even break even on an ATM. But it was a calculated risk I had to take. If I didn't find out what had really happened to Chelsea, no one would. And unless the truth came out, Louis would get his money back, but I'd end up going to jail for a zillion years. I was planning on going somewhere, but it wasn't jail. The guy in Chelsea's apartment had come from Nevada, and the stamp on the inside of her brother's books had read, Deluxe Importing Exporting, Chance Bando, Proprietor, Las Vegas. Ironically enough, my search for the proverbial one-armed man was about to lead me to the land of one-armed bandits.
A stroke of luck, eh, Mr. Donnelly? What are the odds of us both being on this very train? But I wouldn't imagine a man of your disposition believes in coincidence.
Well, sure I do. I also believe Martians landed in New Jersey last Halloween.
And do you also believe in the, what is it called, Easter rabbit?
Easter bunny. That one I'm not so sure about.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. I am the Easter bunny.
No kidding. I thought you'd look different.
It's true. You see, I know where you can find the most amazing Easter egg.
They fall off the bridge!
They know we're here!
Come on, princess!
All they want is the key! Let's go back! If I give it to them, they'll let us go!
It's too late to go back now. Shut up and run!
The dreams were becoming clearer, more intense, but they still didn't make any sense. It was like I was in someone else's nightmares. When I woke up this time, it took a second for me to remember that I really was on a train, the Disoriented Express. 2 hours earlier, I'd made a new friend in the pawn shop business, and his name didn't rhyme with crook. My so-called friend would have accused me of stealing Chelsea's books, and while that was technically true, I didn't need to hear it from him. Besides, Chance Bando had been right about the old books. They were worth a bundle, and Rook would have lied through his wooden teeth and given me pennies on the dollar. The bitter little midget was so tight, dogs howled whenever he passed gas. As it was, my new pawn shop pal had given me more cash for the books than I'd earned in the past 2 years. Granted, that wasn't saying much, but it was enough to get the ball rolling. Or highball, as it were.
What can I get you?
Bushmills and water with a shot of Bailey's. Make it a triple and hold the water.
One Irish makeover coming up.
I don't know why I'd taken the train. Maybe it was the romantic in me, but it was also cheaper than flying and faster than walking. A few rounds later, we were within view of the strip. I grabbed a cab and introduced myself to, Amadoha Jermifisto Kamala? As we rose above the desert sands and sailed for Deluxe Importing Exporting, I asked if he was one of the Pacific Grove Doha Jir Mi Fa Stola Kami Da Sola. but he informed me that the spelling was different and then refused to talk to me for the remainder of the flight. 10 minutes later, he dropped me off at a strip mall. Chance's establishment was sandwiched between the Peep Show Palace and an Indian restaurant. The Navajo taco sounded pretty darn good, but I was driven by a sense of urgency, and I was hoping Chance's place had a restroom. Front door was good and locked. I thought about kicking it in and doubted anyone would care, but all things considered, I thought it best not to attract any unnecessary attention. Besides, my bladder felt like a cracked pinata, and one good jolt might cause me to spill the goodies. I jogged as gently as possible around the back of the strip mall. I was about to irrigate the desert floor when I saw something that made me immediately forget my P's and Q's. A sliver of light through a slightly open back door of Deluxe Importing Exporting. I slipped inside and crept towards the source of the light. I peered around the corner into a small office lit by a green-shaded banker's lamp. I liked what I saw. The dame was turned away from me, thumbing through the contents of a file cabinet drawer. Raven hair tumbled onto the shoulders of her cream-colored blouse. A close-fitting black skirt with an impossibly narrow waist stopped just above her knees. And the dark seam in her sheer black nylons ran straight down into the heels of her glossy black pumps. I needed a cigarette.
Make one move and I'll scream.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
What are you doing here?
Just having a cool, refreshing llama light. What are you doing here?
I work here.
Well, you should try unlocking the front door. I've heard it's good for business.
We're not open. Mr. Bando isn't here, and I'm just his personal assistant.
Oh, business must be incredible. Allow me to introduce myself. The name's Tex Murphy, and I'm friends with Chance's sister. She disappeared, and I think he might know something about it. Oh, and I am a PI. I've got a license and everything.
Let me see.
So, where's your boss?
I wish I knew. He's been gone over a week and I haven't a word. He's never done this before, and I'm afraid something may have happened to him.
You got any proof of that? Or is that what you were looking for in the file cabinet?
No. He said he'd write me a check, but he didn't. I need to pay the rent on my flat.
Your flat? Tell you what, doll. I got so much cash, I'm walking with a limp. Maybe we can work something out. Let me go ahead and clarify that. I think the phone is ringing.
I don't answer the telephone.
It's no wonder he doesn't pay you.
It's not that. Chance insists on handling all the customers directly. I'm not to answer any calls.
Mr. Bando?
Who wants to know?
You're late for your appointment with Mr. Kazistanis.
How late?
9 days. If you want to see your sister in one piece, you have exactly 1 hour. Be at the middle roulette table at the Palladium. Play nothing but black 11, $100 bets. We'll find you.
Who was it?
I didn't say. But I guess he was some kind of hired thug. Tell me, what would I have to do to pass myself off as Chance Bando? According to my new acquaintance, Juliet, all I had to do was lose my hairline, shrink about a foot, and beat myself silly with an ugly stick. It was a moot point. My hunch had been dead on. Chelsea was still alive. But Chance wasn't around to save her, so it was up to me to pinch hit. Juliet was nice enough to let me ogle her legs out of the corner of my eye as she gave me a ride to the Parthenon. Don't get me wrong, Chelsea was still the girl of my dreams. Come on, even Chelsea would have stared at him.
No more bets.
I was down 1,200 clams when I finally saw the little ball fall into the 11th slot. Not surprisingly, at that exact moment, I found myself moving backwards involuntarily. As someone stepped in neatly to take my spot at the table, I turned to see two quasi-humans the size of vending machines on either side of me, squeezing my arms like they were tubes of toothpaste. The room I was taken to resembled a Grecian palace, only nicer. In the middle of the opulent cavern was a single poker table with five incredibly fat, poorly dressed slobs. The overall effect was like a tiny cigarette burn in the middle of the Mona Lisa. One of the players looked up just long enough to remove his soggy cigar and wipe a thread of spittle from his lip.
That ain't Bandle. Get rid of me.
Where the hell is Chelsea?
What do you care?
She's my... Well, she's my girlfriend, I guess. Pretty much. After old Pokerface calmed down, we laid our figurative cards on the table. He admitted that he had the goods, as Chelsea was apparently known in these parts. He went on to say that he'd been a longtime customer of Chance's, who it seems had been making a good living of procuring slightly illegal black market merchandise, in particular items from one of the more evil factions in World War II. Several months earlier, Chance had been the go-between on a deal for a certain artifact. Kazastanis had fronted a down payment for it, then Chance had amscrayed. Most of what Kazastanis said was Greek to me, but it all boiled down to this.
I'm a sporting kind of guy, Murphy. I don't want to do nothing to your girl, and I'll hand her over to you, safe and sound. And I don't even care if it's to you or to her brother. But you either gotta find the artifact, or give me my 600 grand.
With that, the wet cigar went back into his mouth and I went bye-bye. As I was loaded unceremoniously into a taxi, they handed me the 3,500 I'd won at the roulette table. Kazastanis really was a good sport, but I didn't like the odds he'd given me. Coming up with 600 grand was just ridiculous, and he hadn't bothered to mention what the artifact was. On the bright side, I still had a pulse and I was up 23 bills for my night's work. I leaned back and closed my eyes as the taxi started to fly off into the sunset. Hold up a second.
The thing you're looking for, everyone's looking for it. It's in the position of the Armageddonists. But I'm telling you now, they would give it up to get their hands on you.
Why would they want me?
It's not you they want. It's who you were.